Good morning. Come on. Good morning. I am so excited to be here. I'm so excited to share this word with you. Look at your neighbor and say, he's excited. So look out. We going to be here a while. No, I'm just kidding. As Dylan shared, you can take your Bibles out, turn to Psalm 86. All right, so Psalm 86. Today, we are talking, the theme of today, if you're taking notes, is it's a personal and a practical guide to prayer that we see here in Psalm 86. A personal and practical guide to prayer from the life of David. Okay, so we're talking about prayer, okay? And here's kind of the main idea around prayer that I want to unpack for us today, that prayer is often misunderstood. It's not a ritual, right? It's not something we do before a meal or something like that. I'm not saying that any of those things are bad, but prayer is intended to be a relationship that is rooted in the character of God. Okay, prayer is intended to be a relationship that's rooted in the character of God and essential for daily life. One of the quotes that I love about prayer that you've probably heard, if you have ever heard me talk about prayer, is that I never pray for more than 5 minutes, but I never go 5 minutes without praying. And I love that. I never pray for more than 5 minutes, but I never go 5 minutes without praying. Paul says over and over again in his writing to pray without ceasing, right? And that's kind of what that looks like. I never pray for more than 5 minutes, but I never go 5 minutes without praying. Prayer is essential for our daily life. And again, prayer is often misunderstood as a religious duty or a last resort in crisis. But Psalm 86 shows us something different when it comes to our prayer lives. It's not a cold speech or cry, but a passionate and personal conversation with the living God. See, David, the author of Psalm 86, is likely in distress at this point. Okay, people wanted David's life. He was attacked, more than likely weary, in need of help, and his prayer gives us a pattern for how to approach God honestly, reverently, and dependently. Okay, Louis Giglio is a pastor down in Atlanta, Georgia, and responsible, not solely responsible, but he's kind of the front guy for the Passion movement. If you've ever heard of Passion music, Passion worship, Louis Giglio kind of started that back in the early 2000s. Wow, I sound old, right? Back in the early 2000s, when worship music became big, it became something, you know, we don't have some of the music that we have today without this movement. And Louis Giglio defines prayer as this: living in constant communion with God. Constant communion with God. Now, I want to do something to kind of illustrate this for us this morning. Is that okay? And so I need three people to help me out. There are three people that are willing to come up here and stand on stage for a minute. You don't have to do much. Okay, just three people. Anybody? Wow, okay, there's one. Okay, Ben, come on. Ben, I'm going to have you stand over here. Yeah, come on. Thank you so much. I'm so glad. One more. Thanks, Nate. Come on, Nate. Oh, or Tana. Come on, Tana. You can come, Tana. I was going to ask Nate Schools because nobody was volunteering, but Tana, come on up. You were volunteering. That's great. That's great. Okay, introduce yourselves. You guys know each other? Okay, all right, yeah, and Tana. Okay, so we have Brian, we have Ben, we have Tana. Okay, Tana, I need you over here. Actually, no. Let's do Brian. Brian, why don't you come over here? Tana, that's perfect right there. Okay. Now, there's three levels of this when it comes to prayer. Okay. Now, again, Paul's whole purpose in writing was to do what? To stir into the believer maturity. Okay. Now, how many of you know that as you grow just in life, not even talking about grow as a believer in Jesus, that when you grow in life, your speech grows, hopefully, right? Like you get more eloquent, you learn new words, you know, and hopefully, right? Some of you haven't, and that's okay. Like we love you still, right? But there's kind of three levels to speech. when it comes to talking with another individual. And the first one is just that, right? Talking. Okay, talking. And it kind of looks like this. Hey.
Hey.
How you doing?
Great.
And that's that. Right? Like, it's kind of that obligatory, like, you know, and some of you don't feel this like others feel this, right? Like, some of you can stand in a line, stand in an elevator, and not say anything if someone else gets on that elevator or gets in line behind you or anything like that. You are perfectly fine not talking with anyone else for the rest of your life. Right? Anybody? Okay, thank you for your honesty. I'm glad you're in the fellowship of believers this morning where talking is encouraged. But that's like, talking is the baseline, right? Where it's obligatory. Like it's we've made eye contact. I have to say something. I don't really care what the response is, right? Like that not this is not a reflection on you. You should have stood here. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. It's not a reflection, right? But it's you, right? Like I'm good with a status quo level, baseline level of talking. And this is where prayer starts, right? For the believer, prayer starts with, what do I say? Right? As a pastor, I often have people come to me and say, I don't know how to begin praying, right? And I'll say these words, just talk to God like you would anybody else. And so if we practice that, right, it's like, hey, how you doing? What's new? And you're just going through your kind of standard lines that you do with almost everyone, right? I was just on a trip and people from all over, right, converged on in this one place. And so My standard talk line this past week was, where are you from? I didn't really care about the answer, but it was just something nice to say, right? Anyway, you get the point. Then there's communication. The difference between talking and communication is, in communication, I care about the response, right? I really want to know. And so if I communicate with Ben, it starts similar. Hey, Ben.
Hey, what's going on?
How you doing, man?
Yeah.
Yeah? What's new?
New Jersey.
Yeah. Yeah. How's the job?
Job is good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Have you eaten anywhere new lately? Just play along. Just say something.
Christus, yeah.
Christus?
Yeah.
Oh, I've been wanting to check that place out.
It's pricey.
Is it? Well, you're buying, so let's go. Right? You see the difference. It's not cold. There's an interest. My body language has even changed where I'm like, I'm facing Ben, and I'm probably uncomfortably for Ben, close to Ben, right? Just wait, Brian. Is your stage three, bro?
Yeah.
It's so, oh yeah, right? You had no idea when you came to church this morning, right? But there's a communication, right, where I'm seeking response from Ben. I want to know, Ben. And so when we get to that level in our prayer life, right, it's we've realized now that prayer is a two-way street. Indeed, we're going to talk a lot about that this morning, right? We've realized that prayer is a two-way street, and that prayer involves me not just saying words, not just talking, not just giving a list, but actually sitting and waiting for response and hoping for response. Hoping for response, hoping for an emotional connection of response, right? I've never been to Christus, but I've heard amazing things, right? We connected over that. He's been there. Now I'm interested.
Big portions, very big portions.
Amen. Hallelujah. Where was I? You love. Okay. So anyway. And then lastly, so prayer is living in constant communion with God. Now a lot of people misunderstand this, right? Because we've been trained that communion means, right, bread and juice, right? That when we have communion in the house of God, we're coming to the table together, right? There's a meal involved. And so when we think of communing with God, most of us think of the Lord's Supper, right? But communion really means, if you were to look at the definition of communion, it's the sharing or experiencing, you ready for this, of intimate thoughts. It's the sharing, exchanging of intimate thoughts and feelings, especially when the exchange is on a mental, emotional, or spiritual level. Okay? And so I talked to Tana. I communicated with Ben. Now I want to commune with Brian. Hey, Brian. Man, I am just struggling. And there's this conversation I've got to have. I'm really scared to have it. I'm really nervous about having it. Man, you got any advice for me? You don't have to give me advice, but you get
the... We could run through it together.
We could run through it together. See?
Yeah.
I knew Brian was going to be there for me, you know? Kristen hates it when I use this illustration, but communion is when you take your shirt off with somebody. Right? It's when you get, we're not going to do that. We're in church. But you figuratively, right? You share an intimate thought. You share an intimate struggle. You share a sin in your life and you say, man, I'm struggling with this and I need help. I need help. And I'm convinced that many of us don't experience the prayer life that God intended us to experience because we never cross the line of maturity from communicating to communing, or maybe even from talking to communicating. We never sit with God, even though He's all-knowing, and I think that's part of it, right? God's all-knowing. He knows my heart. He knows my deeds. He knows that. He knows this. But there's a lot of things about my son and my daughters that I know. Right? I know they love me. They don't have a choice. I know that they want to hang out with me. I know that they want to talk to me. I know that. But isn't it sweet as a mommy or daddy to hear, hey, I want to spend time with you. I need to tell you this. Hey, I need your advice. Listen, some of you got young kids. When you've got a 17 and 15-year-old in your house and they come to you and they say, hey, I want advice, there's a party that just happens deep within your soul, that there's still a piece of them that wants to rely on you. It's incredible. And imagine the heart of God when we bring our intimate thoughts, struggles, feelings, even though He knows them all. I believe that. He's sovereign. He created us. He knows our tendencies, our pulls, and all of that. And so in the same way that there's different levels of relationship here, different levels of talking, communication, communing, right? It's the same in our prayer life. Thank y'all. Y'all can have a seat. And my hope for you is that we move from Tana in our prayer life to Brian. That we move and that we grow. And here's the thing you got to wrestle with, okay? In the same way, right, that Brian and I just met, and some of you in the room, right, I'm closer to than others. That happens, right? That's a reality. Kristen and I have been married for a little more than 19 years. We've been together for over 20 years, more than half of our lives we've been together. We have learned how to commune together, right? But we talk to each other probably differently than other married couples in the room talk to each other. We have a vocabulary. Any other married couples, you have your own vocabulary when you're communicating with each other, right? You've got your own words. You've got your own things. Like, there's things that Kristen and I say, like made up words that mean nothing to anyone else, that we say to each other, then we know exactly what it means. You know why? Because over time, our communion has led to our own language. It's awesome, right? The same thing happens with God. You know, a lot of people think, you know, when it comes to our prayer life, we've got to talk a certain way. We've got to speak a certain way. I had a pastor in college. Every time he started his prayer, he'd say, "Hey God, hey God." And at first, when I heard it, I was like, "Whoa, he's being irreverent." Because I was always taught, right? When you approach God, it's, "Dear Heavenly Father, dear God." And so for a long time, I thought he was being irreverent. I was totally judging his connection with God. And then it was like, "Hey, dum-dum, he's fine. He's got his own language with me." I had another friend in college. Every time he started praying, he'd say, "Dear Daddy." And I was like, "Oh man, that's too much." Right? Like, come on. Where's your reverence, bro? You know, "Dear Dad." And then all of a sudden, like, I would listen to how passionately and emotionally he would pray to his Father in heaven. And I was like, all of a sudden feeling like, okay, this is real. This isn't a show. He's not saying "Dear Daddy" because he's trying to flex a deeper intimacy with God than me. That's his language with his Father. That's his language with his Daddy. And so appropriately, he said, "Dear Daddy." And each one of us, I encourage you, right, that there's a language that you have with your Father. There's a way that my family can talk to each other where you probably overhear it or watch it or observe it and you think they can't stand each other. And that's probably not true, right? Hopefully, right? But finding your language of communion, your approach to communion with the Father is so important for every person. Because one of my favorite attributes about God is that he's so personal. Even in a room like this, right, where there's, I don't know, 100 people in the room, right? Even in a room like this, God can and is, we believe, as we've put this service together, individually communing with each and every one of us in the room. With each and every one of us in the room. That's beautiful. And each and every one of us in the room, if we were to walk out and share about our experience, we'll probably, at the end of this service, each and every one of us have a different experience, some way, some shape, some form. Why? Because God dealt with us personally. Isn't that beautiful? And so in prayer, if it's living in constant communion with God, that's where we've got to grow to. And what I believe and why I'm convinced that many of us struggle with prayer, when many of us use it as a last-ditch effort of life support, a lifeline, that sort of thing. We try everything else, and then we think when we get to our wits' end, "Oh, well, I guess I'll pray." Right? Maybe I'll try prayer. It's because we've not grown up. We've not matured from talking to communicating or from communicating to communion. Let's look at David, Psalm 86. Sound good? Okay, so there's some things I want to share with you here. 4 points from the text and 4 takeaways. Okay, 4 points from the text, 4 takeaways. Sound good? All right, 8 points in 18 minutes. Let's rock. "Incline your ear, O Lord, and answer me, for I am poor and needy. Preserve my life, for I am ungodly. Save your servant who trusts in you. You are my God. Be gracious to me, O Lord, for to you do I cry all the day. Gladden the soul of your servant, for to you, O Lord, do I lift up my soul. For you, O Lord, are good and forgiving, abounding in steadfast love to all, everybody say all, who call upon you. Give ear, O Lord, to my prayer. Listen to my plea for grace. In the day of my trouble, I call upon you, for you answer me. There is none like you among the gods, O Lord, nor are there any works like yours. All the nations you have made shall come and worship before you, O Lord, and shall glorify your name, for you are great and do wondrous things. You alone are God. Teach me your way, O Lord, that I may walk in your truth. Unite my heart to fear your name. I give thanks to you, O Lord my God, with my whole heart. And I will glorify your name forever. For great is your steadfast love toward me. You have delivered my soul from the depths of Sheol. O God, insolent men are risen up against me. A band of ruthless men seek my life, and they do not set you before them. But you, O Lord, are a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. Turn to me and be gracious to me and give your servant, give strength to your servant and save the son of your manservant, maidservant. Show me a sign of your favor that those who hate me may see and be put to shame because you, Lord, have helped me and comforted me. Because you, Lord, have helped me and comforted me. First thing I want to point out to you about prayer this morning is that prayer begins with dependence on God. Prayer begins with a dependence on God. We see here in the beginning of this psalm where David says, "Incline your ear, O Lord, and answer me, for I am poor and needy." He goes on, "Preserve my life, for I am ungodly. Save your servant who trusts in you. You are my God. Be gracious to me, O Lord, for to you do I cry all the day." See, prayer begins with humility. It begins with a dependence on God. We define humility around here like Mike Jordahl from Colorado does, an accurate depiction of ourselves directly related to a high view of God. We see that in David. He knew he was poor and needy, that he needed God. He had a high view of God. You look at the rest of this psalm. "I give thanks to you with my whole heart. I will glorify your name forever, for you're slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness." We see it all throughout the psalm that David had a high view of God and an accurate view of himself. He wasn't puffed up. He didn't have a false humility. He knew exactly where he was and what he needed. And he needed God. And prayer begins with that, our need for God and the end of ourselves. That God, we don't have the answer here. We don't know the way here. We don't know the path forward. But you do. But you do, and you've known it for a long time. And so prayer begins with a dependence on God. David acknowledges his need. He's poor, he's needy, he's dependent. And many of us in our self-sufficient society, right, we live our lives trying to not be needy, trying to not be poor, trying to not be dependent, because that's what we've been taught that we need to do. Yet in our prayer lives, that is the posture that we should start with. God, I need you. I'm poor. I'm needy. I'm dependent on you. I can't take a step. I can't do this unless you show up and give me wisdom. James, in the book of James, he says, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God. And wait for the response. But when you ask, ask in faith. Because the one who asks without faith is like a wave tossed to and fro by the sea because of their doubting. Right? And so James is saying, listen, you are needy. If I were to, in fact, let's do it. If, as you examine your life all across the room, as you think about your life, is there any place where you lack wisdom? Anybody? Is there any place where you lack wisdom, where you're struggling right now to make a decision, where you're struggling right now to discern one from another? It's all of us. And so what that shows us right there is that if each and every one of us are in that place, each and every one of us need God. And if each and every one of us are in the place where we need God, then guess what? Each and every one of us need prayer. And it begins with a dependence on Him. Number two, prayer is grounded on God's character. See, prayer is not about eloquence, it's about dependence. Okay? Prayer is not about eloquence, it's about dependence. Prayer is grounded in God's character. Look at verses 5 through 10. For you, O Lord, are good. Underline all these words that David says. It's awesome. It's great to go back and look and to remind ourselves. For you are good. You are forgiving. You are abounding in steadfast love. Get this. To all who call upon you. Give ear, O Lord, to my prayer. Listen to my plea for grace. In the day of my trouble, I call on you, for you answer me. David was decidedly convinced that God was going to answer him. He goes on, there's none like you, nor are there any works like yours. All the nations you have made shall come and worship before you, O Lord, and shall glorify your name, for you are great and do wondrous things. You alone are God. And so David's prayer life was not founded in David's need. He didn't start there. I mean, he says later on in verse 14, towards the end of his prayer, these people have risen up against me. They're seeking my life. They don't follow you. They don't set you before them, but you, right? And so he gets to his need, but he spends a lot of time here talking about the character of God and why he's coming to him and not living on his own strength. David lists who God is. He's good. He's forgiving. He's loving. He's powerful. He's unique. His confidence in prayer comes from knowing who he's praying to. Isn't that awesome? His confidence in his communion comes from knowing who he's praying to. And that's why often I try to bring up, if we believe God is who he says he is, because think about the track record of God. Think about it. Think about what he did. Think about just the big things. He took a giant down in Goliath. He made a way where there was no way in the sea for the Israelites to cross. He made the sun stand still for a victory in battle. He made water where there was no water. He gave a son where there was a debt to pay with no satisfactory payment. We can come and approach communion with God confidently because he's provided in the past. And he will continue to provide in the future. He's provided in the past, and he will continue to provide in the future. See, it always gets me. It always gets me. Oh, let's keep going. Prayer is grounded in the character of God. See, when we know God's heart, we'll pray more boldly and more often. And so the takeaway here is remind yourself daily of who God is, not just what you want him to do. And that's so important. Remind yourself daily who God is, not just what you want him to do. Remind yourself daily who God is, not just what you want him to do. Number three, Look at verses 11 through 13. Teach me your way, O Lord, that I may walk in your truth. Unite my heart to fear your name. I will give thanks to you, O Lord, my God, with my whole heart. I will glorify your name forever. For great is your steadfast love toward me, for you have delivered my soul from the depths.
A seal number three, prayer transforms the heart. Prayer transforms the heart. David just doesn't want rescue. He wants to be changed. And that's what we've got to recognize in our dependence on God. That we need to, okay, and I'm going to say this in the most loving, eloquent way I can, right? Is that we need to recognize as children of God that we need to grow up. That we need to grow up in our maturity in relationship with Him. Right? Now, think about this. We do this in every other relationship in our life. Right? In our marriage. Ladies, are you happy that your husband has grown up at some point in the last few years as you've been married? Are you happy that get it? Right? We seek maturity in every relationship, right? Friendship. Right? Friendship. We don't want friendships when they start. In fact, they don't start at the first meeting, right? We don't want them to extend. We want to grow up in friendship, right? If I'm going to move from Ben to Brian, right, there's going to be an investment of time. Because if I'm going to go from Christus, right, to rehearsing a difficult conversation, right? There's got to be time, investment, trust, right? I'm not just going to walk out onto that limb on the first date with Brian. Friend of David. Track with him, right? Right? We don't do that, right? So there's an investment. There's a growing up process. A maturing process. And same thing happens in our prayer life. Right? That we've got to recognize that we need to grow up in our prayer life, that we need to mature in our prayer life, that we need to expect that we haven't arrived at anything and want to be changed. And want to be changed and want to be mature. See, when we grow up, when we mature, the end goal of the thing is different. The end goal of the conversation is different. The end goal of communion is different. He asks for guidance. He asks for truth. He asks for a united heart and a deeper reverence. His response is praise. He says, I give thanks with my whole heart. And so prayer isn't just about getting help. It's about becoming holy. As Scripture says, being holy is I'm holy. And so ask God not just to fix your circumstances, but to shape your character and to mature you. And number four, prayer trusts God even in trouble. Look at verses 14 through 17. Oh God, these insolent men have risen up against me. A band of ruthless men seek my life, and they do not say it before them. But you, O Lord, that's an important part, right? That they do not set you before them. What does that mean? They want different things than David wants. David is seeking to glorify God, they're not. Listen, we shouldn't be surprised when people who aren't seeking to glorify God come against us. That's why if you're ever in conflict with somebody, one of the best things you can do is pray with them. Because if you both want the end goal, guess what? God's going to give you your arms. God's going to unite your hearts. That's what we talk about all the time. We disagree with our Bibles open. But you, O Lord, are God, merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. Turn to me, be gracious to me, give your servant strength, and save the son of your maidservant. Show me a sign of your favor, that those who need you may see and be put to shame, because you, Lord, have helped me. And it comforted me. Prayer trusts God even in trouble. See, David acknowledges real enemies and real danger. People are coming for his life. This is not a cute prayer that you put on a pillow. Right? People are coming for his life. David acknowledges that. But what does he do
in response? He reaffirms God's character, even while pleading for deliverance. He asks for a sign, not to show off, right? Not to show off, not to show out, not to brag, but to strengthen his faith and to be able to point others to faith in God. And so even when life is falling apart, you can pray with confidence in God's unchanging love, leaning into prayer, not just when you're strong, but especially when you're weak. So what do I do with this? Number one, make prayer a daily habit, not a crisis button. Again, I never pray for more than 5 minutes, but I never go 5 minutes without praying. David didn't wait for an emergency to pray. This was a life rhythm. We see that in his life over and over and over again. And so start your day with 5 to 10 minutes of honest prayer. No filter, just dependence. Make prayer a daily habit, not a crisis button. Number two, base your prayer in God's character, not your performance. Base your prayer life in God's character, not your performance. Think about the track record of God. Think about the character of God. Think about your favorite attribute of God and just begin praising him for those things. Begin just asking him for more of him. And when you feel unworthy to pray, remember, it's not about your worth. It's about what we just sang about, his mercy. And number three, let prayer change you, not just your situation. And in order to do that, we've got to recognize that, guess what? We need to be changed. I know we hate that word, right? Matured, grown up, changed. Changed. There are desires within me. There are wants within me that God needs to take. And I know I'm not alone in that. God needs to take and replace them with pure motives, pure desires, pure wants, responsible things. And so let prayer change you, not just your situation. David didn't only ask for help, he asked for transformation. He wanted the people that were seeking his life to know the God that he was praying to. That's incredible. There's a hope in that. And so what is God trying to teach me in this situation? How can I grow in this situation? And then number four, pray the word. Psalm 86 is a prayer. A lot of psalms are prayer. Let scripture guide your own prayers. Read a psalm a day and use it as a framework to pray. When I was in high school, my mentor Thad, he gave me this book. It was called, I think it was called Refreshing the Soul. You can't find it on Amazon or any place because it was a collection of things that he had printed off and kind of spiral bound it. And it was Refreshment for the Soul or some Refreshing the Soul or something like that. And it was all 150 Psalms typed out in this spiral bound thing. And he looked at me and he said, and me and a few others that he kind of brought close and was discipling. And he said, I want you to pray a psalm a day. Pray a psalm a day. Go through the psalms and read them one a day like you're praying them. Okay? Read a psalm a day and use it as a framework to pray, because each and every one, you see a high view of God, an accurate view of the psalmist. Well, so Beth's going to come and she's going to play a little bit quietly as we practice. Last week we talked about praising God, and we practiced by shouting out some ways that we were praising God, some things that we were thankful for, some answered prayers. And today I want to give you space to commune with God. Today, as we close this service and we're going to pray for a moment and Beth's going to play and Dylan's going to come and close our service in a few moments after we pray, I just want you to sit. I want you to think about your week that you just had. I want you to think about your week upcoming. I want you to think about the conversations that you've got to have. I want you to think about the relationships that you're trying to grow in. I want you to think about the struggles that you're having. I want you to think about the wants or the quote-unquote needs that you have that aren't godly. The pursuits that you're pursuing so desperately that are consuming you, that are maybe yours and have nothing to do with God. want you to think about what's coming. I want you to think about maybe an area of your life where you're just sick of it. I'm just sick of that part of your life. I was thinking about that yesterday. Yesterday morning, I just kind of leaving someplace and thinking to myself, I am so sick of my negativity. I'm just done with negativity. And it took me about 7.5 hours to make a 5-hour drive through Massachusetts, and all my negativity was back. It's amazing. And you should expect that too, right? If you commune with God in a way, right? People say all the time, don't pray for patience. I think that's crippled the church. I think you ought to pray for patience. And instead of whining and complaining about the times that he gives you to be patient, you celebrate the fact that you get to grow in your patience. We're an impatient people. And we need patience. And we need to pray for patience. We need to pray for patience. I'm praying for honor to be restored in the church. Think about it. I'm about to speak at 3 different camps. I'm going to speak a bunch of times. And one of the messages that I'm going to speak in the next 3 weeks is something I referenced back in June in a message after I gave the message for the first time. It's on washing the disciples' feet, that Jesus humbled himself and washed his disciples' feet. I want you to think about this. When is the last time you walked into a room and thought about, figuratively again, not necessarily literally, although I'm convinced that's not a bad thing. I'm about to do it a lot over the next 3 weeks. But when's the last time you walked into a room and thought to yourself, how can I wash the feet of the people in this room? How can I get so low myself and elevate the people around me? No matter what they've done to me, what they've said to me, how they've doubted me. See, we don't receive honor by going around and demanding it. We receive it by being like Jesus. So I just this morning, like, what is your greatest need? What is your greatest need? What is your greatest need? And I just want you to sit this morning for a few moments. I'm going to give you space. We're going to practice this. And start with this. I'm going to talk you through it. Let's take 30, 45 seconds. Acknowledge to God in his presence who you are. For real. So let me show you. God, pray with me. God, I'm needy. God, I'm broken. God, I don't have all the answers. God, I think I do. A lot. But God, I am desperate for you. God, I long for you. God, you know. You know the way. You know the future. You know the reasons. You know the answer. I don't. And so God, whether you give it to me now in the next 5 minutes or in the next 5 years, it doesn't matter. Because God, I need to be satisfied with you. Pray something similar recognize and acknowledge before God this morning your need for Him and His greatness. For that next part, this is where we ask. God, you're awesome. I need you. And God, here, God, I ask that you provide a way where there is no way. God, I ask that you heal this situation. Physical, spiritual, mental, emotional. God, I ask for the strength to forgive. God, I pray against bitterness to creep in to me. As I heard years and years ago, it's okay to preach hurt. It's not okay to preach bitter. God, stop the hurt before it goes to bitterness in my life. God, help me. Ask God for big. Ask God boldly. God, as a church, we want to please you. We want to make you known. There are too many people around us that are not living with a hope in you. Show us. Show us how to get out of our own way and to be a reflection of you in all things. Remove the things in us that aren't pleasing to you. Convict us of stale heart. And so just in the moments this morning, as you pray, ask God boldly, where do you want me to go? What do you want me to do? How do you want me to be faithful? What do you want me to say? What do you want me to give? What do you want me to quit? Who do you want me to talk to? Whose feet do I need to wash? And then lastly, wait. See, I think there's a lot you can do in the waiting. Waiting's hard. We've already acknowledged that. But there's a lot you can do in the waiting. I think we as a culture, we've tried to make waiting as easy and as consumer friendly as possible. We've stuck TVs in lines. We've given games to phones. We've made waiting. We've put game kiosks at tables so that we can entertain ourselves while we wait for food for 7 minutes. We've tried to make the waiting as easy as possible, and in that, I think we've in some ways taken away the beauty of waiting, of sitting and waiting. See, what does it look like for you to not move on what you just prayed for until you know clearly, boldly, loudly, exactly what God would have you do? And so I'm going to pray, and then I want to give you a couple moments to commit to God to wait. And then Dylan will come and close our service. God, today, I pray for a patience and a waiting in our communion with you. God, that we would not grow restless, that we would not grow weary in doing good, in waiting, but that, God, we would wait expectantly with anticipation of what you have for us, knowing that what you have for us is way better than anything else. And so, God, strengthen our hearts in waiting. Humble us under your mighty hand. Help us to ask boldly, boldly, for the sun to stand still in our lives, for a path to be made where there is none, for provision where it doesn't make sense, for friendship in desperate loneliness, for help in time of need, for healing in sickness and brokenness, for hope and salvation where there is none. May we ask, may we be a people that ask and expect boldly and wait for you to move. And so just in these moments, you pray before God. Dylan will come and close us.